Who's going to change the most in the NHL during this time? Who's going to come back and stun us?
That's right. Well, he always stuns us when he comes on the show. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is Craig Button. Craig, I don't know if you heard the question there from Dave Pullen. Who's going to be the Bryson DeChambeau of the NHL?
Well, you know, one thing we know about hockey is the hockey has some kind of very defined lines, and you know, players stay within those lines pretty good. You know, who would be the players? Like I would say PK Subban, but PK Subban's already outgoing and he's not participating. Mm-hmm. Evander Kane, he's not participating. Drew Doughty, not participating. So I think now we gotta go to our imagination and try to think, okay, who would be the Bryson DeChambeau? So let me think here.
Who would really change their game and come back? Maybe I should phrase it a little differently. I don't necessarily mean gain 25 pounds, but who has the ability and who recognized right from the first day that they were going to change something in their game and come back and stun the world? Because that's what he's done, Craig.
Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry, I thought, sorry about that. I misunderstood. I thought about really, well, but I do think PK could have been that player if he was playing, because, you know, he had a tough season with New Jersey, and I think he could have come back and got back to that level. I do think that about him. Let me see here. Jamie Benn.
Jamie Benn's a great call. A great call. Very, very interesting. Former, you know, leading scorer in the league, an MVP candidate who could come back and have an enormous impact on the game and the team and what happens.
Yep. That's a guy, that's one guy I would really pick. I mean, the stars are the stars, I think, and what you're looking at those players that, you know, need to come back and like you said, stun ya, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's why I said PK Subban. Vander would be different. He's already been a good player. Drew Doughty, obviously, I think he could have definitely raised his game to another level, to that level he was at if he was playing. So, Jamie Benn. I'm going to go with Jamie Benn. And you know who the other player I'm going to pick? Western Conference team, Nashville Predators, Ryan Johansson.
Ryan Johansson's capable.
So you're looking at untapped potential that we've seen.
Well, I wouldn't say it's untapped, Mark. We've seen it from them.
Well,
we just want more.
We just haven't seen it in recent times.
Yeah, who can go in and take over a series, as DeChambeau's done with the golf course? It's so hard to analogize what changes you would make. You know, is someone going to come back that's always, and Ryan Johansson would be a great example of a guy, you'd say, has he always been in the maximum condition he could be in, Craig? And the answer to that would be probably not. And, you know, and the thing I think is interesting with DeChambeau is he made a decision from the very first day that golf stopped. That wasn't something he eased into. He put the pedal to the metal from the first day in what he was going to do with whatever time, and that was unknown, that he had off. And, you know, and because Ryan Johansson, if he came back in the most elite shape he's ever been in his NHL career, he can win a series for Nashville.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this, Dave, because you've been through, you were a well-conditioned athlete. Hey, listen, you're still exceptionally well-conditioned. So, you know,
not sure I've used the pandemic perfectly.
I'm just making sure that the accolades are put into the proper places.
Well done, Craig.
And anyway, so, but like, how about that feeling of being mentally rejuvenated? Mm-hmm. You know, it's one thing, and you know, Dave, the grind of a season, and you know the challenges, and you, when your team isn't as like. How is Kucherov feeling in Tampa Bay? Like, how is Patrice Bergeron feeling in Boston? You know, older players now that have had this chance to mentally rejuvenate. How much did that help? You know, moments of the season where you really get rejuvenated mentally.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny you say that because I always feared teams who had top players who missed portions of the season, and particularly, you know, missed like significant time in January or February, and they came back so fresh. And I'll tell you two guys that could go a long way towards winning a series, and that's Shea Weber and Carey Price. And, yep. you know, if you look at those two guys mentally and physically, totally rejuvenated, totally able to take a season that didn't go as they wanted it to, and in a very short period of time turn it around. And that makes, you know, a team like Montreal very dangerous in a short series.
What about Connor McDavid, who spent last year from the end of the 2018-19 season, you know, rehabbing that knee, really putting his full focus in there? We know what he did coming back in the season, but how does he come back now? Not only what I would think is fully healthy, but in a different frame of mind.
Wow, that could be really interesting, because a guy who rehabs all summer has missed a total summer of building his conditioning base. And that's what people don't realize about a major injury. Rehabbing is not conditioning. It's simply not. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get back to your baseline by rehabbing. You're not taking it to a new level that a 22 or 23-year-old is capable of doing. So I think there's going to be so many great storylines here, yeah. Craig, as we get back into it. Every single series I look at, and I'm starting to look at the series, and it's just really exciting, every single one I look at, to see what, you know, what it could bring.
Yeah, you know, for me, you know, and I know you've been asked this, and Mark, you've been asked this, but, you know, one of the interesting things for me, when the season paused on March 12th, teams had done their work, you know, leading up to the trade deadline, making their transactions both ways, you know, adding players and subtracting players. And, you know, never does an NHL coach have an opportunity to regroup after 4 months or so with the same group that he left off, because in the off season, 7-8 players usually leave. So when you've maxed out, you know, from a management point of view, what you think gives your team a best chance to win, you know, my feeling is that the teams that are the best teams, I think, now have the best chance to win the cup. What do you guys think?
Well, it sounds like, because I'm hearing two sides of things from so many in the game, that we could see total chaos and that upsets are going to happen left, right, and center. Or I'm hearing kind of what I think that you're leaning towards. The better teams are going to be the ones who are suited for this unpredictable season, and don't discount the teams who have done really well this year. Because we assume that it's going to be this wide open November-like hockey, and teams like the Montreal Canadiens can ride their goaltender, or maybe Chicago upsets Edmonton. Like, which one of those two scenarios do you lean towards when you look at this restart?
Neither one. I really don't. And I'll tell you why. Like, I mean, John Cooper is coming back to the same team he left in March. Bruce Cassidy's coming back to the same team he left in March. And guess what? Claude Julien is coming back to the same team that he left after they traded Kovalchuk mm-hmm. and Nate Thompson and Nick Cousins. And, you know, like, listen, you know, you look at Chicago and Jeremy Colleton, he's coming back to a team without Robin Lehner and without Eric Gustafson. And that's what I think the teams that position themselves that, you know, to try to be better, you know, with players that aren't that are now healthy. I mean, how good is Hedman going to be? How good is Steve Stamkos going to be coming mm-hmm. back, right? How good is Seth Jones going to be coming back? I don't put Columbus in that same category. But, you know, all these players are coming back to a team that's already good. See, I don't think there's going to be chaos. I think we could see absolute sweeps, you know, once. And I'm not talking in the play-in round. I'm talking about once we get into the round of 16.
Yeah, if you look at the East in particular, I love teams that have been through a lot, and Boston, Washington, and Tampa Bay have been through a lot. And you know, and the cores of those teams have won. They've gone to conference finals, if not the Stanley Cup finals. If not, you know, two of those three teams have won a Stanley Cup and been humbled along the way doing it. You know, in many respects, if you look back a couple of years, and Tampa Bay didn't make the playoffs a couple of years ago, as crazy as that sounds. And so, you know, but it's going to be the way it starts. When I speak about chaos, it's that first, second night of once we get to the first round of the playoffs and the pressures that come with that, just for those teams, if they get down a game or two games into it, and to see how they react. Well, I'd way rather have, you know, Patrice Bergeron and Chara sitting in my locker room and Brad Marchand and see how they react than I would, you know, a group of untested players.
Oh no, yeah, no question about it. I think the teams like Chicago, like Montreal, I think they have to create an environment of chaos in the way they play. If they want to talk about playing with structure and everything, I think they're doomed. I think they have to create the environment of chaos to try to unsettle Edmonton and Pittsburgh, respectively, to give themselves any type of chance. Because if it comes straight down to the skill and the team base that they have, I don't see any chance for them to win. Or I should say, I see very little chance for them to win.
Craig Button joining us on Overdrive. We are taking small steps back to normalcy when we're watching Craig Button on television talking about hockey, which was the case with you and Gino and Jermaine Franklin yesterday. You broke down the Flames and the Jets, and I know you're doing that for the Canadian teams in the NHL. For this Maple Leaf Blue Jackets series, what's a big storyline that fascinates you as we get closer to this playoff series?
Well, here's what I would say. You know, we know that the Toronto Maple Leafs are a really, you know, offensively gifted team, a high-scoring team. You know, we know that. The Columbus Blue Jackets are one of the best defensive teams. Now, last year, they summarily dispatched the Tampa Bay Lightning, who were a better scoring team and a better offensive team than the Toronto Maple Leafs have shown to be. So, you know, we talk about power play and skill and everything. I think it comes down to the Columbus Blue Jackets. They get in your face. They get in your space. They make you earn everything. They don't beat themselves. Okay, so that's great. You know that. The Toronto Maple Leafs have this skill. What are you going to do with your skill? How are you going to dial into the same competitive mindset? We're not going to give up the puck. We're going to win the puck. We're not going to beat ourselves. We're going to make sure that we are doing the essential details of the game. Where you think about St. Louis last year. I mean, they never wavered in the way they were going to play in terms of the puck was going back below the goal line in the offensive zone. They were not going to create opportunities for the other team. And they still took seven games to beat the Boston Bruins. And that's what it takes. There's lots of skill in the league, and there's been lots of skilled teams that got dispatched. And look at the Detroit Red Wings in the early 90s, in 95, 96, with all the skill. It wasn't until they really dialed into the details and understanding that every single shift is going to require a determined, focused effort. And because you don't know what shift is going to turn in to be a difference maker in the game. That, to me, is where the Toronto Maple Leafs have to get their mindset. We know they have skill, but it's about how they get themselves in that mindset to maximize the skill. We know when they turn it up, they can be really good, but we also see when they're not focused, they're really sloppy.
And, Craig, so much of the focus, you know, as of late with the pending CBA that will be lengthened, you know, hopefully in the next day it'll be ratified, and, you know, has been on the salary cap remaining flat and what that does to a team that looks like the Toronto Maple Leafs. Yet as I look at this playoff series, I'm fully assuming the bigs are going to be the bigs. Marner and Tavares and Willie Nylander and Austin Matthews will do what they do. I'm really intrigued to see if Ilya Mikheyev can come back healthy, if Alex Killorn can play at the highest level he's played at, Kasperi Kapanen, Andreas Johnsson. Those players that are at the next level for the Leafs have to be really, really good. Just as they have to fit in financially moving forward, that's all the focus to me turns on whether that group of players can provide the support to the bigs who I assume are going to do what they do.
I couldn't agree with you more. And it, you know, it, using your term, the bigs, then to the next group. You got to do your part to the next group, right? Rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. Try to do that for 19 wins because you know what? To win the Stanley Cup requires exactly what you described, Dave. You know it. You've been there, and without it, you get dispatched pretty quickly. And when you do get into that rhythm, you know, not that it becomes easier. Dale Hunter has a saying: "The hard way is the easy way." And what he means by that is, you know what? When you don't want to cut corners and you focus in on the task at hand and you dig in, you know it's hard. But it becomes easier as you do it more. When you want to take the easy way, it becomes really hard to win.
Craig, you always need leadership to be successful in the playoffs. It doesn't matter what sport you're playing. But can you especially say that in these circumstances when you're trying to be a responsible team doing your training camp in your selective city and then making the travel arrangements to get to the hubs, the team that shows maybe the most leadership is going to be the one that's rewarded at the end?
Yeah, I look at leadership a little bit differently, okay? And I think that every player has to lead himself. Every player has to be accountable, number one, to himself, because he's got all these other players around him that are counting on him. And, you know, I really believe this idea of one or two or three or four leaders just showing the way. Like, you know what? Everybody has to lead and lead themselves. Be focused, be dialed in, and understand that what I do is important. And whether that be in your sleep, in your training, in your nutrition, in your practice habits, in your game habits, not taking penalties and everything. Like, again, if it just came down to just having the best leaders, then the best leaders would always win. And that's just not – there's so many outstanding leaders in the game that don't always win. And, you know, so I think you create an environment where everybody knows that they're part of something much bigger than themselves. And, you know, obviously there's people that are going to – they're going to take the lead in that and set an example in that regard. But that's how you it just kind of – continuously goes down the line. And Mark and Dave will tell you this. Dave was a captain of the league and a great leader, right? But he'll tell you this. There's a lot of players on teams that might not be recognized as leaders, might not wear a letter, but are tremendous leaders because they might take a smaller group and lead that group and tell them, hey, here's what you got to do, and, you know, and how it works in the concept of the group. So, you know, It would be great if just one guy or two guys just stood up and said, here's the way it goes. You need a lot of people, in fact, everybody, to number one, lead themselves. And then you need to manage these different groups. And a lot of teams that have the leadership down the group, Dave talks about the bigs and then how everybody else, it also goes down and setting an example. Hey, listen, you know what? The backup goaltender getting into the net and being serious about helping the team in a practice, you know, I'm going to be really focused in on making it hard to score on me. Like, that matters. Mm-hmm. That's leadership.
You know, Craig, some of the focus, and we'll just change it for a second here and point it at the coaches. You know, the when it came out and it said there will be only, you know, the mandatory or the minimum of three coaches will be included in that 52-person group, which is a small number these days on coaching staffs in the National Hockey League. But, you know, when you look at the temptation to overcoach in a series in which you've had a couple of months that you knew if we come back and played that you were going to face that team, the temptation to overcoach will be immense with some of the guys.
You know it, Dave. You know it. As well as anybody, yeah, because that's exactly, you know, you hate to say they've had too much time to think.
They've had too much time to think. They have.
One of the things that I said that I'm really interested in seeing is, you know, coaches, the systems of team play and structure and everything that goes with it, I want to watch the coaches that are going to come out and be creative. They're going to throw the Philadelphia special at opponents and, you know, going to do the onside kick. You know, at the beginning of the second half, you know, to catch an opponent off guard in the Super Bowl. That's what I want to see. I want to see, you know, how much creativity some of these coaches are going to implement into their team play. Mm-hmm. Because they've also had a great opportunity to think about things a little bit differently. We know that a lot of coaches will never think about things differently, but I'm going to be watching for the ones that have been, because I think there's some out there that we talk about players that might surprise. I think we have an opportunity to see some coaches that might surprise.
I'm looking forward to the stories that come out of this postseason and what teams did to be successful behind the scenes and how they got a little creative. But should be fun. We're getting closer and closer to it. Training camp, tentatively, will start on Monday. Craig, always appreciate you coming on this show. All the best to you and the family.
Oh, yeah, all the best to you guys. I have one last question for you.
Okay.
You know, everybody was enthralled by the Last Dance, you know, with the Chicago Bulls run there, right? I hope that the NHL or an individual team or somebody gets somebody behind the scenes in their content creation group that starts filming this. And in 10 years' time, we have the Hub City dance or the COVID-19 dance or something.
Great call.
I mean, how compelling would that be to watch that 10 years from now and
Great
see
call.
What went on?
Yeah, because let's hope that it never happens again, right? So it's it's the
chance. But just to I'm taking liberty with the pandemic and naming it, but like when you think about what happened with the Bulls and how they taped that whole year and they sat on it for over 20 years and we look back on it and we're fascinated, how fascinating would this be to go into this time, in this period of time in our lives that is unprecedented and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that someone's able to do it and Craig gets his cut from it. Thank you so much, Craig.
See you guys. Have a great day.
There you have it. Craig Button joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. The showroom is open. They're taking the necessary steps to provide a safe environment for every guest. Just visit Maple Toyota next to Wonderland or buy online at mapletoyota.com. Mike Golic Jr. from ESPN joins us next on Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.